Welcome to the Resource People Podcast, presented to you by Australian Resources and Energy Group, AMA. The Resource People Podcast brings to life the stories behind the people, workforces and companies of our great industry.
Welcome to Resource People Podcast. I'm Tara Diamond, your host, and it's a pleasure to bring you a conversation about a wonderful initiative being undertaken by global service provider Sodexo. In this episode, I chat with Jackie Bainbridge, Sodexo's Head of Indigenous Affairs, Diversity and Inclusion, about its focus to employ more refugees into its workforce, an initiative which was a deserving winner of the AMA 2021 Industry Awards for the Diversity and Inclusion category. You'll hear how this initiative is delivering outcomes, not only for the refugees participating in the program, but also for Sodexo, as it explores an often overlooked avenue of recruitment. I hope you enjoy hearing about this impressive and inspiring initiative and how Sodexo is leading the way for others in the resources and energy sector to follow suit. I hope you enjoy the episode. Welcome to Resource People Podcast, Jackie.
Thanks, Tara. So lovely to be here.
Before we get into talking about your role and this amazing initiative we're here to talk about, could you please tell us about Sodexo, what you guys do and what you guys do in Australia?
Of course. So Sodexo is a French-owned global leader in services which ultimately improve quality of life. It includes a unique array of more than 100 integrated services such as facilities management, catering, transport, concierge services, asset management, and hospitality, just to name a few.
Yeah, wow.
Globally, we actually work across 64 countries and we service more than 100 million consumers each day. But here in Australia, we have around 300 sites and employ more than 5,000 people. We've actually been operating in Australia for more than 30 years.
Oh, that's fantastic. And what about your background and your role at Sodexo?
So thanks. I've actually just celebrated my 1 year anniversary at Sodexo in the role of Head of Indigenous Affairs, Diversity, Equity and Inclusion. I've actually worked in this space for over a decade now, and I've worked across a number of different industries. Ultimately, I've always been driven by working with people and companies that are committed to improving equity and equality. I've said it many times before, I'll say it again, since stepping into the role at Sodexo, I'm genuinely astounded by the company's investment and approach to supporting Indigenous Australians and diversity and inclusion more broadly. Ultimately, my work here at Sodexo is about ensuring that everyone right across our operation feels welcomed and comfortable and able to bring their whole selves to work every day. And I'm really, really fortunate to work with an amazing number of First Nations people who drive our Indigenous work, and together we champion efforts that drive improved outcomes for all of our diverse communities.
Oh, wow. And just to hearing your passion makes, I'm sure, many people listening want to come and work at Sodexo. It's so impressive. And we're going to talk about one of Sodexo's amazing diversity and inclusion initiatives, which was recognised with an AMA Industry Award recently for the 2021 AMA Industry Award. But before we talk about that specific initiative, because we're going to spend a bit of time diving into it, can you tell us more broadly, you gave us a really good intro then, but can you more broadly talk to us about Sodexo's focus on DE&I and why you think, you know, as you said, when I stepped in, you know, to the role, you were so taken by the commitment. So, you know, really the focus and importance from the organisation.
Absolutely. I think the difference here at Sodexo is that the work in the DE&I space is really grounded in our commitment to corporate responsibility. We truly believe that achieving diversity and inclusion is critical to our role as an employer, also as a service provider, but more genuinely, just as a corporate citizen. Diversity at Sodexo, it is the cornerstone of our culture, and it's a fundamental component to our company's overall growth strategy. Globally, we talk about the DE&I program covering 5 different key dimensions, and those being gender, culture and origins, disability, LGBTIQ+, and generations. And within each of those areas, we continue to implement programs and initiatives which really foster that inclusive culture, drive change in local communities, but also really have meaningful impact for the lives of people right around the world.
Wow, fantastic. And my work with Sodexo over the years, you know, it's very well known that the company is renowned for its work in D&I. And we want to talk about this specific initiative, which earned you guys the AMA Industry Award in the Diversity and Inclusion category. And I just really want to say congratulations.
Congratulations to everyone at Sodexo. And of course, your clients and, you know, everybody that you guys touch every day, because this initiative is so wonderful, is very important, and it is committing to and lifting the employment of refugees. Can you tell us about Sodexo's global commitment to hiring more refugees and how it's been implemented in Australia?
Absolutely. And let me say, I genuinely love this program. It's one of my favourites.
Oh, awesome.
Sodexo globally, we've specifically made a commitment to hire 2,000 refugees by 2025.
Mm-hmm.
We've been a member of the Tent Foundation for a number of years now, and they have really supported us in this global pursuit for employing more refugees. But at a global level, until recently, these efforts have predominantly been focused around Latin America. We really haven't used this as a talent pathway here in Australia.
Mm.
Until COVID hit, Australia had resettled between 16,000 and 18,000 refugees each year, and approximately 80% of those refugees are of working age. But we know for so many refugees, they face huge barriers to being able to participate in the labour market. And it might be that they don't have local work experience, they may not have the social networks, their skills and qualifications are undervalued. Or it might just be that they just don't know the Australian recruitment process.
Mm.
So we really wanted to create that program that helped refugees overcome these barriers and really provide a tailored pathway to support them into meaningful employment.
Wow, that's so amazing. And we're going to get straight into the what, where, who, how, why, because people will be so fascinated to know how you've done that. So can you elaborate on the program and what the processes that are involved behind the scenes in terms of implementing this commitment? And perhaps also if you could touch on some of the things, like you've just touched on some of the key barriers, but what were some of the key considerations that you had to do in terms of designing the initiative?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think before we really started, we wanted to look at what was already happening out there in the Australian labour market around employment of refugees. So we connected with Humans Like Us, and through them, we actually were in contact with a variety of refugee settlement support agencies, as well as a number of corporates who shared their success stories from their own refugee employment programs. We also spoke with refugees who were already working at Sodexo. It wasn't a targeted program of recruitment we'd done, but when we went back and looked at our own internal employees, we realised we actually did have some refugees working for us. So
right.
We wanted to understand from their perspective what had and hadn't worked, what tools and resources they think would be valuable. And then we looked at that in comparison to corporates already working in that space, such as Woolworths, IKEA, ANZ, to understand how we could really tailor a program that would work for us and work for the work that we do. The end goal was really, we decided we would create an intensive training program. I guess we did that because we know that a lot of people, and especially for refugees who aren't familiar with the Australian mining industry in particular, the concept of FIFO life is quite a foreign one. People don't really understand what it is involved in it. So we really wanted to create a program that would support them in that really foundational implementation stage. So we looked at how we could support them through learning around HSC processes, responsible service of alcohol, the FIFO life and that culture that's involved in it. And we did that through partnering with Southwest Metro TAFE as a training provider. So they ultimately delivered 4 weeks of training for our refugees, which was then followed up by what we classify as a soft landing. So they went out to site for 2 weeks, 1 week rather than our usual 2 weeks, and did tour the day. So over that space of that week, they actually built up their time. So they kind of started 8-hour shifts and built up to 11-hour shifts. But as part of that, they had an on-site buddy as well, and that was really vital to the program to really make sure that they were supported during that initial phase.
Yeah, I really would love to know more about the buddies in assisting and mentoring people in the program. And I want to know about it from a design perspective, but I also would love to hear any feedback that you have in terms of the responses from the existing workforce in terms of providing themselves as buddies.
Yeah, absolutely. So look, the buddies themselves were absolutely vital to the success of this program. And that's because it really helped people land well. So they didn't get to site and go, oh, where do I go now? What do I do? Who do I report to? They had somebody there. For most of our participants, their buddies actually met them at the airport and sat with them on the plane on their way out to site. So it was really from that foundational stage. In fact, for some of them, they actually met their buddies even before they had finished their TAFE program.
Yeah,
so
right.
They were able to build rapport with people well before they actually then landed on site. All of the buddies themselves were long-standing Sodexo employees. They had all worked with us for a number of years. And we really made sure that those buddies, as well as, you know, the site leaders and the site managers, were culturally competent. So we took them through additional training. We helped them understand about the language to use and how to help them settle into Sodexo life, how to make sure that they got, you know, really great guided tours of the sites when they landed, and all of those bits and pieces that just really helped the participants feel like this was their new home and this was part of where they were going to be working at for the next little while. The feedback from the buddies, the feedback from our site leaders and the participants has all been the same, that this was really, really positive. Our buddies loved it because it gave them the opportunity to show off their own site and their work and their knowledge as well. So it really drove engagement with them. But from the participants' perspective, it helped them feel more comfortable and just overall land better.
Well, how did that transition go? I'm really interested. Are there any other support measures or any comments or kind of insights that you can give people that are listening about, you know, you talked on the soft landing, building up 1 week instead of 2 weeks, building up the hours. You know, how on reflection, how has that transition gone?
Yeah, really, really well. We also did regular check-ins with the participants themselves throughout that first week from a HR perspective. And then we also did check-ins once they came home as well. So made sure that they were still feeling safe and comfortable after that first week, that they wanted to continue to go back out to site for their next swing, which would be a full swing. Make sure that they had, you know, thought about all the implications of leaving their family or friends for that time that they'd be away. So we did lots of additional check-ins and surveys and, you know, emotional support for our participants. And I think that that was really, really vital because it gave them the opportunity to go, well, hold on, I actually need some extra support with this. Or some instances, the participants were able to tell us, look, you know, I didn't enjoy working in this area of the site, but I really enjoy being able to work in this area. So that gave us the opportunity to go back to our operations team and go, look, is there a way that we can make sure that for their next swing, they're focused on just this one area and not put them over there? So it really gave us that opportunity to tailor the program and the pathway forward for each individual.
Yeah, wonderful. And it's probably a nice moment in the conversation to ask if there's any particular story or any particular element that's stuck with you that you'd like to share about the program.
Yeah, I think there's probably two stories that have stuck with me. Maybe the first one isn't for the reasons that you might think, but the first one's actually, it's about one of the participants who came to interview with us at the very start of the program. So before we kicked off the final recruitment phase, we had some open sessions where people could come and learn more about Sodexo and more about the program. And we had, you know, groups of up to 50 people there at some times.
Wow.
But one of the participants who came was a man in his 40s, and he brought along his son, who was only 11. And during the course of this session, it became really clear that this man spoke very little English and his son was actually there to translate for him.
Right.
So while we couldn't actually progress this man, to me, this was really, it was one of the highlights of the challenges that refugees have when they arrive, that they don't understand the Australian working environment. But more than that, it was a real highlight of the pressure that often the youngest members of the family are under. When they're their children themselves, but they're having to act as translators as well as go to school. And for, you know, Sodexo, it was really one of the reasons, you know, why we started to look at how corporates can work more with community programs to ensure that refugees are settled into Australian life, you know, through things such as English practice or building networks. It's really, really vital that corporates and community work together in being able to deliver that.
Yeah, that's wonderful.
I think one of the other stories is, this one's a little funnier, it's around the power of language. So during the program, as I mentioned, we'd run training for our participants and the buddies and site leaders around language and how to talk to people to make sure that they're being really inclusive. But we forgot to mention the literal meaning of words. So at one of our sites, we had a participant who was stopped in the mess area for running because it was a hazard. And when we asked him why he was running, he said he'd been told to. We're like, what do you mean you've been told to? The instruction he'd been given is, can you run over there and get something?
Oh,
and he took
gosh.
That literally. And so while we can see the funny side of it, it was a really great reminder for us around the power of language and how to make sure that, you know, at site level, sometimes we just need to be really clear in our communication and what we actually mean and make sure that people understand what we mean. We don't just assume people know what we mean.
Oh, my goodness. And, you know, is that comparable? You know, you mentioned that Sodexo globally has been doing it and a lot of focus in Latin America. How do you have you been able to share or reflect on the experience that you've had in the Australian context versus, you know, comparison to the other programs that Sodexo runs elsewhere in the world? Is there many things that are the same, or is there some unique things like you just mentioned to Australia?
No, look, there is definitely some similarity. So I think all refugees, no matter where they're located, they're in an unfamiliar setting. Mm. They experience language and cultural barriers and are often, probably sadly, more often than not, they actually experience real prejudice in their working environments as well. So we have looked to what our teams in Latin America have been doing around this. But we also, you know, as I said earlier, we connected with other corporates here in Australia, such as Woolworths, IKEA and ANZ, to understand some of the barriers that they've had as well. I think one of the key learnings for me was, especially when we looked at it in the Australian context, is that each organisation has taken their refugees recruitment program in a different direction. Each of them have got very different models. But to me, this really just proves that there actually isn't a one-size-fits-all model, that, you know, you really have to make sure that when you are doing it, you're tailoring it to your organization to make sure it works for the organization. But I will say that one of the other learnings that we took that we really helped develop this program with was actually the learnings of our Indigenous employment program that we've had really long-standing success for here in Australia. So one of our Indigenous employment programs also does a TAFE program. It's aimed very much at Indigenous Australians who have maybe limited work experience. And while the lived experience of First Nations peoples and refugees are obviously very different, there are some similarities in terms of a lack of understanding around FIFO life, that limited work experience, a limited understanding of things such as HSE policies, and also, you know, barriers to employment often. So we're able to, I guess, merge lots of different data points together in order to create this refugee program.
Oh, that's amazing. And I'm curious to know, in fact, it's probably a more practical question now. Does the program design lend itself to doing a group of cohorts at once, or does it lend itself to be doing it ongoing? How are you approaching it from a design perspective?
Absolutely. And we 100% want to keep this program running. Mm-hmm. We've actually partnered now with the community corporate to help us deliver the next stage of our refugee program. And we've put together a relationship based off the employment of 100 refugees over the next 12 months. Mm-hmm. That will be very much through cohorts, as you're describing. So, you know, we will put through probably 5 to 10 people at a time in order to help them land and make sure that they're provided with enough support, both from a site level, but also from, you know, a training level as well, before we then bring in the next cohort. And we'll also look to, I guess, spread the refugees across more sites as well. So in order to be able to really ensure that, you know, our clients get the best opportunities to engage with refugees as well. The refugees get the best opportunities. But, you know, to really just thrive that inclusive culture of refugees across more of our organisation as well.
And this may be a kind of odd question, but elsewhere in the world, have you seen that there's a difference between the retention rates of refugees versus other groups of employees? You know, for example, is there strong retention once they're given an opportunity, or is it too early to tell?
No, look, Kent Foundation has huge amounts of data on this.
Great.
Especially from countries such as Canada, who have had, you know, really long-standing commitments to employment of refugees. And the data is clear that, like a lot of minority groups, refugees stay. So their retention is really, really high. They are often less injured as well. And there's a lot of research behind that, which is basically when people feel psychologically safe, they're actually physically safer as well.
Right.
So not only are people taking less sick leave or, you know, being less injured, but they're staying for longer as well. So there is clearly business benefits to engaging in this program.
Wow, that's amazing. And I'm really keen to hear from three different perspectives, the feedback that you've had on the program in any order you prefer, but really, you know, your clients, your existing workforce, and of course, the refugees that you've put through the program so far.
Yeah, look, I think let's start with our participants, our new refugees.
Yeah, great.
Employees. They were all blown away. They've absolutely loved the program. And, you know, we've had quotes from some of them saying that, you know, this has provided them that, I guess, the knowledge and the information in order to not only make themselves safe at work, but also safe at home as well and in the community. So our participants feel really comfortable, both physically but also psychologically. They are all still working with us, which I think is, you know, shows a great outcome in itself.
Yes. Fantastic.
And, you know, although it was a small cohort of 10 people, we're really proud to see those 10 still with us.
Yeah, wonderful.
From the broader workforce, people love it. You know, our site leaders are saying that people are very engaged. People are, you know, learning about new cultures. I can share that all of our refugees in this current program had all come from the Africas.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, people are able to, you know, learn about different cultures and learn about, you know, history that they may not have had exposure to until now. So people
Wonderful.
Have really taken it upon themselves to make people feel welcome, but also to make themselves a little bit more educated as well, which I think is great. It really drives retention, let's be honest, because people feel proud about the work that we're doing in this
Yes.
space.
It's
and then
wonderful.
From our clients have all loved it to the point where we've actually had three existing clients say we want to be involved in the next cohort.
Wow.
We want people to go out to our sites as well. And with one of our clients, they're looking at us going, okay, well, how can we get refugees started with you and then look to transfer some of their skills, especially those who might be, you know, highly educated? And I think that's one of the things. We have a lot of highly skilled refugees in Australia who's
we've all been in an Uber or a cab with an engineer
exactly.
or yes, absolutely,
exactly.
Jackie.
Exactly. So, you know, we want to make sure that we are able to target some of those populations as well, who we can then help pipeline them into, you know, new workspaces and help them, I guess, move those transferable skills into different industries as well.
Yeah, wonderful. And even just hearing the feedback from the judging panel, who of course have always got a really hard task with these awards, they were just very impressed, but also very touched with the initiative because although it makes absolutely perfect sense, not everybody's doing it. And so you're really being an innovator, particularly in the resources and energy industry in this space. So I know you touched on your commitment to employ 100 refugees in the next 12 months. In addition to that, what other focuses have you got in terms of diversity, equity, and inclusion in terms of considering refugees in your workforce? Are there any other plans that you might have already started thinking about?
Yeah, absolutely. So we're also doing some work with our clients as well. So there is opportunities with some of our clients to look at actually increasing the required headcount to provide refugees with internships. So that might be as chefs, as an example. We know that there's a lot of social enterprises that support the employment of refugees right across Australia. So we're looking at that through our supply chain.
Right.
We're looking at how we can provide volunteering to refugees as well. So, you know, as I said, touched on earlier, doing things such as English practice with refugee populations as well. So there is lots of different ways that we will continue to build out this program. But, you know, the big one for us will be that direct employment. And I think, you know, if we can employ another 100 refugees over the next 12 months, then that will really set the foundations for making this a bigger and better program once again after that.
And hopefully inspiring a lot of organisations, those that are your clients and those that have heard this podcast and want to know more. And of course, get in touch with Amma if you want to have a connection with Jackie and we'll facilitate that. But I guess it's a good point on that to ask you if you have any advice for other organisations who haven't previously considered direct employing refugees into their workforce. What advice would you give them?
Oh, absolutely. Get on board with it. And why wouldn't you do it? Look, I personally, as I said before, I love this program because people often just need a foot in the door. And as I said earlier, you know, so many refugees are highly skilled, but just don't understand the Australian context or may just not have the networks in order to be able to get jobs in their field. So when it, I mean, we all know it, it's a talent war out there at the moment. So if we're not tapping into every possible different talent cohort that is out there, then we're doing ourselves an injustice, but we're doing the community injustice as well. So it makes absolute sense to me, and I genuinely can't understand why more organisations aren't doing it. So more than happy to be connected to anybody who would like more information on our program, because, you know, I think that we have certainly made some learnings, you know, and looked at ways that we can continue to refine our program for our refugee population. But honestly, it is just, it's such a great program, and you can see the difference that this is making in people's lives. So I would love to see more corporates doing it.
Oh, how fantastic, rewarding, necessary. Yeah, I could go on and on, but just want to thank you so much for sharing this initiative with us, Jackie, and congratulations, as I said before, to you and the whole team for kicking this off in our industry and bringing stakeholders, clients along the journey as well. I'm sure it inspires a lot of other organisations across the industry to consider and to get involved and look at how they can employ direct hire refugees into their workforces. Thank you so much, Jackie, for joining us on Resource People Podcast.
No problem. Thanks, Tara.
Thanks for joining us on this episode of Resource People Podcast. I hope you enjoyed learning more about this impressive initiative from Sodexo, and perhaps it's inspired you or your organisation to explore the benefits of recruiting refugees. I'm sure you will agree that this is an important part of increasing the diversity and inclusion in the resources and energy sector. I look forward to you joining us next time on Resource People Podcast.
AMRA acknowledges and pays respects to the traditional custodians of the land from which the Resource People podcast was recorded from today, both the Turrbal and Yugara people. AMRA acknowledges the traditional custodians of the land on which you are living, learning and listening to this podcast from today. We pay our respects to elders both past, present and emerging.